Tango Tango Papa 1907, May 4, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you from, I don't know, I think I'm northern Indiana, along Interstate 65, exit 240. There's a couple of truck stops here, a Flying J and a Pilot. Don't know, I don't remember the name of it. It might be Hebron or something. Don't remember the name of the town right at the moment. So in any case, I was home for several days, took the 5 full days off, came back to work on Sunday, and so that Sunday they had me pick a load up at Fort Smith, Arkansas. That load delivered this after, it was actually early this evening, at Bolingbrook, Illinois. And then they sent another load that it picked up in Chicago this evening. And then that load delivers to Zanesville, Ohio. And let's see, so today was Monday. So it delivers Wednesday at 9 a.m. unless it's probably, I think it's set up, it looks like it's a live unload. I do know that we do drop and hook there, but I think this is probably going to be a live unload. Don't know. I'll find out. But anyway, that leaves me with plenty of time to make it to Zanesville, Ohio. I think right now I'm down to probably around 360 miles from where I'm at right now in northern Indiana. So, had an enjoyable time off, as I usually always do. This time I spent more time working on the projector and in my room, and getting the larger screen put together and kind of getting that put into place, and so that little project is coming along. I think there are more things I'd probably want to do in the future, but at the present time, got the thing. It's basically in operation. There's a few things I could probably do to enhance it, but at the present time, relatively happy with what I have. And it, the thing I'm ecstatic about is the fact that it takes that room that I've, that's an extra bedroom that I really haven't had a use for other than just stuffing things in and using it as a storage room, and to the point where you could barely walk in the room. And it's been like that since, 1993 is when I got the house. And so pretty much ever since then, I think I cleaned it up once, and then it quickly ended up becoming a storage room again. And it's just been a junk room for all that time. And now it actually has, it serves a specific purpose, and no junk gets put in there. That's the end of the junk. So it you know, so I'm ecstatic about that. So I have at least one audio comment, that being from Joel, and I'll be kind of playing. I listened to it a little bit, and he's to kind of make sure it was going to play okay after I recorded it off of Voxer, made a recording of it. And so his comment is about 7 minutes long, and I did listen. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I listened to parts of it. He's kind of talking about food, trucker food, kind of responding to what I was talking, or one of the things I was talking about in the last podcast. And I may or may not have an other comment. It just depends on Dropbox. And if Dropbox is able to finish syncing, if it's able to finish syncing or not, I don't know if it's going to or not. It kind of acts weird at times, but in any case, before I play Joel's comment, I always end up with ideas that kind of pop into my head, and I really don't have control of when they pop in or why. But when they do, I have learned that it's a good idea to go ahead and write them down, because oftentimes it's so easy to think that I'll remember these ideas, but I don't. It's easy, you know. They can be there for 1 minute and then kind of gone shortly thereafter. So it's better to just write them down. So I've often talked about the school system. And we are being inevitably moved toward a police state. A lot of people see that now. I don't know how many people are still in denial, but it's been happening for a long time. And in recent years, we're racing toward a police state. So you wonder. For a while, I was confused, and why you see these things happening in school where the kid brings a plastic fork or a plastic knife, and they treat them like they're some sort of terrorist, literally. And they call the SWAT team because a little girl or something, or a little boy, brings a plastic knife to school with their school lunch. And you think that sounds like an absurd. Those things have actually happened. And they say, oh, well, this is our no-knife policy or whatever. And they react like it's a, you know, with a SWAT team. So it's, of course, it's absurd. But why are they so insistent? It seems really absurd, but why are they so insistent on these rules? And you have to follow our rules. Because that's where the real police state and training is happening. So when you send your kids to public school, you're sending them to be trained to be good little police state subjects. To be good police state participants. Everybody has to be the same. You can't think any different. Uniformity is enforced, and they're really strict about enforcing it. And so it produces really they're chicken house kids. You know, you talk about people that people like to talk about how awful chicken houses are, factory farms, factory chicken houses, how terrible they are, and yet those same people and other people like them will send their kids to the public school system, and it's essentially a factory. But it's a factory that is designed to make everyone think alike. It's designed to destroy individuality. And so you're putting kids into the mental equivalent of a chicken house factory. A factory farm. Only in this case, it's screwing their minds. It's a chicken house utopia. And the mindless parents use the excuse that, oh, well, I had to go to school when I was a kid. You're going to go. Besides that, I need you as the school system's a good babysitter. I have to pay for it. I'm having to pay for it out of my taxes. So therefore, that's a good reason for me to send you off to be brainwashed. Everybody else is doing it. I'll do it too. I have to pay the money, so might as well take advantage of it. So what's being done in this police state is it's beyond a police state. They're in the process of creating dependency. How do you create dependency? How do you make people dependent on the state? So in other words, how do you make good subjects for the dictator, or good subjects for the king? It's easy. You destroy the family. You destroy the family unit. They've done a superb job of it. Look at all of the kids born outside of marriage. 50%. Overall, born outside of marriage, don't know who the dad is. Utterly destroyed. It's in a state of destruction. That's how you create dependency. It's easy. Look at the inner cities. Those are even worse. They're burning down. Easy to use those as a battering ram to destroy the remnants of what's left over of the society. As you are likely aware, if you've been listening to me, listening to this podcast for the past 10 years, if you've ever seen a picture of me, I am covered with tattoos, and literally covered. And so on Facebook, I am quote-unquote Facebook friends with lots and lots of people. Don't know what the number is, but quite a few people that are heavily tattooed in the same way that I am. Even more extreme than I am. And I'm not doing that. I'm not befriending them simply because somehow I think there's safety in numbers or it should be a group thing or whatever. I am more interested in how these people think. And simply, I love observing people. I can't help myself. I've done it all my life. I've observed people. And I just do it without thinking about it. constantly observing people and how people interact with each other, how they relate to each other, how they relate to the world around them. And I've noticed that a lot of these people, these Facebook friends of mine that are heavily tattooed, I've noticed that there's a fair number of them that it is obvious to me that they're rather unhappy people. Now, quite a few of them, if you look at the kind of things that they post on Facebook, in the comments that they make, quite a few of them they're blaming society, they're blaming their parents, they're blaming someone else for the fact that they're really kind of miserable people. They're unhappy. Now, why would these people be unhappy? Why is anyone unhappy? Why is anyone unhappy? People think that it's the opposite. They think, well, I can do whatever I want and I'm going to be happy. But somehow, the more quote-unquote free they are to do whatever they want, somehow they end up becoming more unhappy. Now, why is that? And why is it that... I'm not saying that the tattoos are making them guilty, but the tattoos could be making them guilty. I'm not saying that that's just the only cause, but that could be a cause, certainly. In the same way that someone that's overeating is guilty. Same exact dynamic. So let's focus on the people with the tattoos in particular that are unhappy. And they're kind of blaming society. They're blaming whatever. It comes across as somebody else's fault. Somehow it's something. It's a fault of their environment. Something is making them unhappy, but it has to be outside. And society, somehow the conclusion is drawn that somehow society just doesn't love them enough. And then taken to a greater extreme, will force people to love us. Will somehow force people to accept us. And then we'll feel better about ourselves and so on. But the thing that you have to understand, and it's virtually impossible to get people to understand this, to really understand it in a way that... makes a difference. And it's an incredibly simple thing, but it's people just can't or won't grasp it. Let's take a person that is heavily tattooed, even to the point where their faces are covered with them, and they're looking to their friends. They've got all their other friends, and they're trying to find people that somehow people accept them, and it's obvious from the way that, especially there's a few in particular that I look at their posts, and they're talking about being depressed and kind of not really blaming the tattoos, but blaming blaming their lives, or somehow things didn't work out right, or blaming the circumstances. And somehow they're very guilty people. What I'm saying is, I'm covered with tattoos. I don't feel a bit of guilt. Zero guilt. Now, what's the difference? What is the difference? What causes anyone, you know, taking it kind of out of the realm of just specifically tattoos, but what causes anyone to be miserable? Is it the environment's fault? Is that the problem? Is it the environment? Somehow it's the people around you that it's their fault somehow that you feel miserable? The thing that you have to realize is if you feel miserable, if you are unhappy in any way at all, what you have to realize is that it's not the environment. No matter what's going on in the environment, it's within you. There's something wrong within you. There's something wrong in the way you're relating to the world or relating to your existence. It's not necessarily just it does encompass the world, but there's something more specifically, there's something wrong in the way, at the root of it. There's something wrong in the way that you're relating, to whatever it is that is at the very center of our consciousness. What takes us away, of course, we judge, resentment is how we do it, we judge, judgment, and then in order to escape the conscience that instantly tries to correct us, what do? Then we become proud and we try to find a bunch of slimy friends, safety in numbers. Find other people that agree with us, right is wrong and wrong is right, so we can have a shared fantasy. A shared fantasy, sort of a topsy-turvy vision, version of what we think ethics are. So it becomes okay to screw anyone inside. It becomes okay to shack up. It becomes okay to divorce it, willy-nilly. Whether there are kids, and especially if there's kids involved, it's okay. And and the kids, well, we can just kill those. Unwanted byproducts of sex. Unwanted byproducts of sex. We can just get rid of them. It's easy. It's just a little tadpole thing. We'll just chop it up and vacuum it away. Better than that, we'll take a morning after pill. And then it's like it never happened at all. So, guilty people have an internal problem, but they want to force others to help them perceive it out of existence. And of course, that's not possible. It's not possible to perceive something out of existence. It's not possible to perceive that out of existence. You can't perceive misery out of existence. You can't perceive guilt out of existence. And I'm talking about guilty conscience. Can't just perceive it out of existence. It's just, well, we're just going to decide it's not there. It's gone. So we have our distractions, our idolatries. People jump from one idolatry to the next, and they may get the illusion that they're getting a little bit of relief for a period of time. And then the people that are really good at creating the thing to be idolized, those people are the people that are really good at that. They can charge whatever they want. They can charge as much as they like. So just remember that if you are unhappy with your existence, if you think you're depressed, there's nothing really wrong with the world, and I don't care what the circumstances are. You think it's circumstances somehow that are making you depressed, and if you just change the circumstances, it's going to get rid of the depression. It doesn't work that way. You have an internal problem that you're not facing, that you're running away from it. And getting someone to admit that is next to impossible. It really is a tough thing to get someone to admit that they've, essentially, that they've been programmed. I was listening to this podcast a while ago, and this guy's a, you know, kind of an Apple fanatic. It's this podcast. There's two Apple fanatics kind of talking back and forth to each other, and they're discussing Samsung. And the guy said, "Well, one of the guys said, I used to like Samsung TVs, but I don't like them anymore." And he didn't offer any reason why. And I could tell him the reason why is because Samsung is the new demon. It used to be Microsoft in the Apple idolatry religion. The demon used to be Bill Gates. It used to be Microsoft, but not so much anymore. Now the demon is Samsung. It's Android, it's Google, but really it's Samsung. Samsung is the demon. And so this guy, I would never, if I could have a one-on-one discussion with him, be as logical as I possibly could and present the facts to him. and I would never be able to get him to admit that the only reason why he demonizes Samsung in his mind is because that's what the religion requires. Apple demonized Samsung, therefore the followers do too. Because if the followers were ever to go against the tide of the religion, of the idol, then the idol, the groupthink, withdraws the support. It withdraws the, it throws them back on their guilt. So it's very similar to, let's say you have someone that ends up in a gang, and they're raping and robbing and pillaging and murdering, and they get people to, you know, the gang initiation, they get them to do something awful, maybe commit some kind of a crime or maybe even a murder in some circumstances, get them to do that, and then they've got them where they want them, because then they're part of the group, they're initiated. And so all they have to do, if they have second thoughts about, if the people start to have second thoughts about being in the mafia or being in the gang, all the gang has to do is just threaten to withdraw the support. But in the case of a gang, they could also turn them in. But they don't even have to do that. They're offering them ego support for the rotten side of their ego that's become more rotten and committed the crime. Your teenager takes drugs, and then suddenly he's friends with the pusher, and you become his enemy. He's friendlier towards the pusher because he's taken on that identity, and the pusher supports it. So hand in hand with idolatry, whatever the idolatry is, and it can be literally anything, as I've said many times, you could have a ritual with a toothpick. You could have a toothpick religion. Whatever the idolatry, you end up becoming programmed. Your thoughts are not your own. Someone else is designing your thoughts for you. And certainly in the case of Apple and the people that are the rabid Apple people that really idolize it, their thoughts were primarily designed by Steve Jobs. And so they all kind of took on, to a certain extent, they all sort of took on Steve Jobs, parts of his personality. And to a certain extent, they're still doing it. Tim Cook has been able to kind of keep it going. I think he does understand the idolatry aspect of it. Of course, he never speaks about that, but he understands it. It remains to be seen. He's been able to keep that part of it going, but sooner or later, somebody's probably going to screw it up. The products have slid. The software is not as good as it used to be. The quality of the software just isn't what it once was. So, hard to say. Apple's got tons of money, so it's hard to say how long they'll be able to kind of keep the thing going. But it's a fascinating thing to watch. All of these people idolize it. But their thoughts are not their own. You idolize whatever it is you idolize. You're taking on kind of a pre-programmed behavior of whatever it is you idolize. Whether you realize it or not, and certainly most people don't realize that they've done it. And they will never, they can't and cannot admit, they might be able to see other people doing it, but they cannot admit that their acting and their thoughts came from the outside. The thoughts were programmed from the outside. They'll swear up and down that their thoughts are their own. Guarantee you, if I could have a one-on-one discussion with this guy I was talking about in the podcast, I would never be able to get him to see that the reason he dislikes Samsung now is because that's what Apple kind of programmed him to dislike it. So it's the demon. Idols have to have demons. Have to have. No exceptions. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play Joel's comment. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. Good show, last show. That was pretty good. I find it interesting what you do to just, eat and stuff. And I will agree, most often or not, it's probably going to be better for you to just grab something to eat and move on. But I am interested in what you were talking about with your Burton Stone there. That's actually sounds pretty damn cool. One other thing I saw, and I don't know how feasible carrying this would be, and the only reason I say that this might be interesting to look at is I think it could be possibly faster for your little Burton 12-volt stove there. But the key thing here is what you need to use it, and that's and I'll share the link in the email for you. There's this thing called the BioLite stove, and it's basically, it looks like to me, and I have to look further and see if you can get one like with the fuel that you can use, but it looks like to me that you would put like pieces of wood and sticks into it. And it's not very big, by the way, so it's not something you would have to carry big old pieces of wood in your truck. But the coolest thing about it, though, is while you're cooking your dinner, on the side of it, it actually has a USB jack, so it takes the excess heat that this thing produces and actually like turns a generator or does something that you can actually charge your phone up with or tablet or whatever. So I found that real interesting. Now I don't know if I'd ever buy it because I don't really have too many chances where I'm away from an outlet for an extended period of time or where I would need to cook. My son decided a while ago that he had had enough of Scouts and did not want to do Scouts. So I haven't been camping in years, although I will say this, I do enjoy camping, and I'm kind of digging wanting to go camping. So that's going to happen before too much longer. But this BioLite stove looks actually pretty dang cool to me, and I think it might actually heat up faster than your little 12-volt stove. And I know, too, that, yeah, some truckers, they just have lots of time between loads and stuff. And you don't always have that. You know, that's actually probably a good thing. I kind of have the same thing here in that sometimes, you know, I'm supposed to produce documents that I give the client on what I do yet. And I haven't even finished the one where I did a presentation / training online with this client today. And I still don't have the documentation done for their install yet, because I've had so many other client-side things that I've had to do. So, but I'm like you, and a lot of times I just have to get something that I can cook up. Now, fortunately, I work out of the house, so I have a microwave, you know, so I can use that. But and I've been known. In fact, I'm actually out here standing next to it right now. To just keep on hand, like hamburgers and things I can just throw on the grill real quick. It don't take a lot of time to cook. You know, I'll throw those on the grill. As long as it takes like, I don't know, 10 minutes or under to cook it, I can usually cook it and eat it and get back to work within the hour. But I know something like that. And I've seen truckers actually carry with them portable grills and stuff, and also microwaves too. So, and I guess that Schaefer kind of puts a restriction on you having a microwave, which I don't doubt that they would, because I imagine that, you know, having a trucker fall asleep while he's cooking dinner, and if you put too much time on it, you know, it could really ruin the truck as well as his day. So, but, you know, I just find it really interesting what truckers do, and even more so what other folks do in order to just grab a little lunch, a little dinner while they're working. my dad worked construction, and he worked construction in the days where there were no microwaves. So he and one of his coworkers figured out that if he brought, you know, long as in some sort of heat-proof container, if he brought, he's brought lasagna, all kinds of things, as long as it's a little heat-proof container, they can pop that into the weld rod oven on the construction site and warm up their lunch. Yeah, my dad had several stories where where the guys were making them feel bad because he's sitting there eating homemade lasagna and that he warmed up in the weld rod oven, and they had a cold sandwich. This is back before microwave. So now, you know, now it doesn't matter. Most of the guys will bring something if they have a break trailer or something that they can pop into. They can warm up their lunch and have something hot to eat. But it's just to me, it boggles the mind, human ingenuity too. You know, I've often heard of some guys, I don't think I'd try this, but I've heard of not just truckers, but people who drive that will take food and wrap it up and stick it on the engine to warm it up as they drive. I don't think I'd want to try that. I'd probably burn it. So,
thank you, Joel. So the reason that Schaefer doesn't allow microwaves, it's not that they don't allow microwaves. What they don't allow is anything that requires power to be tapped directly into the battery system. And a microwave draws obviously enough power. They draw quite a bit of power. An inverter that powers a microwave oven must be attached directly to the battery. And Crete Carrier Corporation, as well as there are other trucking companies, but Crete Carrier Corporation, one of the policies is that if you're caught tapping directly into the battery, you're instantly fired. And I know the origin of that kind of a policy is because there have obviously been people in the past that have tapped directly into the battery, and then that ended up causing a truck fire. And so that's why they have a policy: you do not attach anything directly to the battery. So that precludes microwave ovens. So now there are some trucking companies that will allow large inverters to be installed, but generally, I don't know. Those are probably smaller companies, and they probably don't pay very well. So I don't really care about cooking in the truck so much. I will, as I described before, I will heat things up if I have to. But as far as trying to cook I just don't have time for it. These days I'm staying pretty busy. Most of the time I'm just way too busy to even consider anything like that. So, and I'm not even... I don't know. Those kind of things take a lot of effort. And anymore, that's not effort that I'm willing to expend. I'm willing to expend effort on certain things, but and those things change over time. But it takes a lot of effort to cook in the truck, and then you have the problem of the washing up afterwards. And there are plenty of videos on YouTube, by the way, of truckers cooking in their truck. Some of them are really trying to come up with gourmet type meals, according to them. More power to them. They're putting a lot of effort into it. So if that makes their existence is more tolerable or better or in some way, then more power to them. That's not something that really interests me. I would just as soon, all things being equal, I'll stop at McDonald's, or I'll stop at Denny's or wherever, and eat. Usually I eat twice a day, and that's about it. Today, let's see, where did I eat at? Ate lunch at a Jack in the Box. That was this morning, around 11 o'clock or so. That's when I ate lunch, and then I ate again. Where did I eat at? Oh, I ended up stopping at a convenience store this afternoon, and I had a... convenience store burrito. And that's and the only other thing that I've eaten today, sister-in-law gave me some peanuts, a bag of peanuts that were and I'm still working on those. I ate some a couple of different times today. These peanuts are they're spicy. They're spicy peanuts, and they're not really all that hot. Actually, not at all. They're just mildly warm, really, as far as the spice goes. But so I've eaten a bit of those, and that's it. I ate at Jack in the Box, and then I ate this afternoon. I ate that convenience store burrito that I warmed up in their microwave. And that's what I had today. So, anyway, thank you, Joel. So I've also got a comment here from Scott, and I listened to the first part of it, and I know that I'm going to probably end up doing a stop-start on it. So here is Scott.
Hello, Tom. I've been listening through your podcast here. I haven't made too many comments, and I'm nearing the end of them, because a lot of the comments I make would just be things that I've said before. But I thought I'd add a couple of things in here for what it's worth. One is on this story about the Muslim, or the guy who killed three Muslims for a parking space, and he going on about how his resentment was in control, and resentment equals evil, and so evil was in control. And I got to thinking of really how that I've thought about this many times in the past in a different way from you, which is I think about how animals are. And when an animal gets upset with another animal for whatever reason, there's something in control there too. The animal, however, does not have to abide by any laws, and nor does it have to have any conscience about what's moral or immoral, like you're talking about, you know, listening to your conscience. So it's completely unshackled. So what happens with these animals? They fight, and often they fight to the death. With if the emotion in that animal has been, you know, brought up to a certain level, and don't know what does that. I mean, who of us can know? But I imagine that it's very similar to these human beings. If we were to go back before we had civilization, Tom, if we were to go back to days that were pre-civilization, that were caveman days, if you will, when one caveman got into a dispute with another caveman, now the civilized us would look at what, you know, if we knew what they were actually fighting over, and we'd kind of have an idea of what would be right and wrong. But let's say there was some meat, and one caveman got to it before the other caveman got to it, and the other caveman come up, and he figures he has more of a right to it, and he's stronger, and they fight to the death, and one kills the other for the piece of meat. And nothing is thought of that. Animals do the same thing, and nothing is thought of that. They, oh, that's just animals. It's wonderful. It's natural. Animals are so pure. They're so perfect. They're so close to God. Well, isn't that what most people seem to think? So I look at it as us dropping back to our most animal self when this happens. And out of the civilized self can think about things and get away from emotions. The animal self can't do that. The animal self is all about emotions and is controlled by them in all aspects. Not just anger, but both pain and pleasure aspects are a part of this drive that drives animals. And I would submit humans, most humans too.
I guess now is as good a time as any to go ahead and interrupt. I actually agree with you about the animals, you know, kind of the human beings, falling back, becoming animals. There's a difference, though. One of the differences is it does, when a human being turns into an animal, it's a bottomless pit. Animals are simply mechanically following their instincts. They have instincts and they have emotions. And they have some sort of, they're aware of their environment. They're not aware of their own existence, but they're aware of their environment, and they have their instincts, and they're really, in essence, they're really highly sophisticated, amazingly sophisticated robots. And they follow their programming, they follow their instincts, they're able to respond, and in some cases learn from their environment. But at the end of the day, a rat is a rat, a gorilla is a gorilla, a cow is a cow, a dog is a dog, a cat is a cat, etc. Dolphin is a dolphin. And it can't ever be anything different. It cannot, none of those things are able to consciously think about right and wrong. None of them are able to alter their behavior. We as human beings, we have this, apart from the extra intelligence that we seem to have, that we seem to possess, we have, there's something extra. And we're somehow aware of our own existence. And this, they like to call it kind of the stuff that goes on in the prefrontal cortex, the executive function. Really what we should be doing, and if we're really conscious and we're really thinking about right and wrong, we are leading our nature. We should be in control of our emotions. We should, in fact, we should be leading our emotions and not allowing our emotions to lead us. Most of us, unfortunately, most human beings are led by their emotions. They're led by base instincts. There's numerous articles, and they've done numerous studies. Excuse me, where they have shown that they can, when they're trying to get a human being to decide. You know, and they've got them all rigged up with test equipment, and their brains are wired, or are monitored, and so they're monitoring brain waves, and the idea is that they're getting people to make a decision, kind of an on-the-spot decision, and before the person actually has the idea, before the person is actually conscious of their idea, and they're able to say what the idea is, or to make the decision, they've determined that there's a part of the brain that actually makes the decision before we're conscious of it. So therefore, they're trying to say, well, there really is no such thing as free will, and it's the consciousness is just an illusion. Etc. And that's true. It really is true. You think you're making the decision. You think that you want to do whatever it is you want to do. How often have you heard me say that? And you've got the illusion that you're making the decision. But why are you, let's say that you're in the bank, use my favorite example. Let's say you're in the bank and on the table in front of you there's a pen and you think no one's watching. And the thought, before you even kind of think, you swipe the pen and you put it in your pocket and you go about your business, and somehow it was a mindless act, but there's something you feel like that it would be some advantage if you swiped that pen, you'd have the free pen. And you did it without even thinking about it. And then maybe later you're wondering, well, why did I do that? Or let's say that you're in a store, and you're all of a sudden you have this impulse buy, and you end up with you end up buying whatever it is that you've bought. Something said buy me, and you come away later and you're wondering, why did I buy that? You have buyer's remorse. What's buyer's remorse? There was something, some other pressure that got you to do whatever it was you did, and then the executive part of your brain sort of rationalized it after the fact. So I believe that we should be conscious. As human beings, as full-functioning human beings, we should be conscious. We should be aware. We should exercise that awareness of our own existence. We should exercise that awareness of our own motivations. Why do we do what we do? And in doing so, that trains the rest of the brain. And then when the decision's made, you're going to grab that, you're talking about cavemen, you're going to grab that piece of meat and kill the other guy because, and it probably wasn't a piece of meat, to get dirty for a moment, it was probably a piece of other kind of meat that they're fighting over. If you get my drift, that's probably what they were fighting over. But or let's say you're in the store and you've got the stupid what do they call that, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. Let's say that you've gotten up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and you're in the store and you're in the crowd and you're trying to get they've only got a limited number of whatever it is, and you got a hold of the box and somebody else has got a hold of the box and you're pulling on it, trying to pull it out of their hands, and they're trying to pull it out of your hands, and what is it that drives that? What is it that would cause you to jump in front of somebody? Jump in front. What is it that causes people to, when they're driving down the interstate, they're driving down the freeway, and then all of a sudden, one lane, let's say they're in the left lane, and the left lane is closed because of construction or whatever. Let's say, and there's plenty of road construction everywhere. And then all of a sudden, and of course the speed limit has already said you got to slow down, but they'll speed up. And they'll try to zoom in front. Now, what is it that causes that? Are they thinking when they do that? Or is something kind of acting through them? Is something kind of thinking for them? And it's not even really thinking. They're not conscious of what they're doing. They're really not, and in a sense, they've led that kind of behavior by rationalizing it, by thinking it's okay, by kind of making excuses for it. I swiped the PIN because, the bank, They know people are going to steal the PIN, so they put them out. They want you to take the PIN. It's free advertising for it. They want you to steal the PIN. I bought the new toy because I bought the new car because I really wanted it. Not because the salesman pressured me, or not because I got hooked by the new car smell, or not because I idolize the brand or I idolize the technology. Not because of that. Oh, no. It's not that. Not because I'm a guilty person and I'm using that as a way of dispensing with the guilt. Not that at all. is because I really like the salesman, or I like the technology, whatever it is. You're not conscious. You're making excuses. So are we human beings or are we animals? Animals, you know, your dog, typical dog or cat, they just pee wherever. They take a dump wherever, not to get too graphic. And it's perfectly normal. And yet if a human being does it, in the same circumstances, if the human being does it, there's something wrong with that. That's indecent exposure. Something really wrong with that. But if a dog does it or a cat does it, well, that's just nature. So are we human beings? Do we want to be human beings? Or do we want to be animals? Or do we want to pretend like we're human beings and yet throw up the animal defense whenever it's convenient? So anyway, I could go on and on and on, but it's just interesting little thoughts that I had while I was listening to Scott. So let's listen to the rest of Scott's comments. So once again, here is Scott.
What they believe, what they do, all of it comes out of pain, pleasure experiences through their life. And you build up these emotions based upon the pain, pleasure you've had. And they bias everything you do. So I kind of look at it that way. And also for a couple of podcasts, you've been going on about our world today, the incredulous world we live in, and morally, how what's wrong is right, and so forth. And it's true. There's some just absolutely amazingly unbelievable things occurring that who would have ever thought as little as 25 years ago that over the half the United States would in 25 years be marrying people who were gay. It would have been laughed at, you know. Let alone other things that have happened as well. For instance, in that same venue, there are three states, and just like the gay marriage things, more are following all the time. But I think it's Colorado, New York, and one other one. I'm trying to think of it as New Jersey or some other state. And then I guess soon to follow, maybe California, maybe New York. California, New York could be. In any case, the law is, and it started out in California, the first one. Basically, it's another law to protect LGBT community, which is lesbian, bisexual, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, in such a way that, and you were giving a story about, or I guess Joel was giving a story about a boy who was choosing to, whether he was a girl, you know, he was kind of experimenting and trying to decide what he was, and Joel didn't quite set very well with him. And this is the whole idea behind this very law that is going in one place after another, which says that effectively, no, you don't have any right to tell these people that they can't choose, that any human being can't choose what sex they feel like today. If they happen to feel like a girl, then you have to honor that. And therefore, if today you happen to feel like a girl and you decide you're going to walk into the girls' locker room, or the girls' bathroom, or the girls' shower room, or whatever, there's nobody that can stop you in those states. You are entitled to, because there doesn't happen to be any LGBT verification card. You know, how would they make such a thing anyway? That you could just hold out and, oh, okay, that's all right. You know, you've been verified. You just say it, and now the law's on your side. I want to go in there. I feel that I'm female. Now, if you happen to be a liar, and worse yet, you happen to be a predator, and you're just kind of going in there to get an eyeful, well, more power to you. You know, that's all right. And this was the fear of many people, but it didn't stop it from becoming law. And it's becoming law in one state after another. That is one of the more bizarre laws I've heard go in that direction. For quite some time, it's been trending more and more and more. It's become kind of the cool thing to be, what's the term, bicurious. And I think it may have started with women, actually. But, you know, you start seeing many TV shows with that as a kind of a theme line, you know, the Roseanne kissing a girl and this other woman kissing a girl. And then Katy Perry has a song out, I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It. And then, you know, more and more and more. And then Lady Gaga becomes really, really popular, and she's very outright about it. And so it becomes more and more cool, you know. Hey, look at all these people that are, that are lesbians. And, yeah, you know, maybe I like it, too. I should give it a try, you know. So it does seem to be going that way, Tom. I can kind of resonate with you on that. It's very uncomfortable. And I was talking with some friends about, you know, what's natural. Because I really believe that it all goes back to what's natural. No matter how many laws you pass, as you were kind of saying too, no matter how many laws you pass to try and make people give love, honor, and respect, there is no law that can be passed that will truly force love, honor, and respect.
Okay, well, allow me to interrupt once again. So what is natural? Now, I think we can observe animals, we can observe nature, and we can say, well, you can determine what is natural for a dog to do, and it's easy to determine what is natural for a dolphin to do. It's easy to determine what is natural for a cow to do. It's easy to determine what's natural for a tree to do. It's even pretty easy to determine what's natural for bacteria to do, for viruses to do. But the question is, what is natural when it comes to human beings? That is the crux, the real crux of the question. Because we know what's natural for gorillas. What is natural for human beings? That's what the war is about. Now, I maintain that this love, because I know what you're talking about, the love, honor, and respect. I maintain that the need for that is an abnormality. There is something wrong with me as a human being if I need love, honor, and respect, if I need that in order to, quote unquote, be happy, or I need that in order to be comfortable somehow, be made comforted, be comforted by that, in order to continue to exist. If I need that from anyone, there's something wrong with me. There really is. I know this is kind of a revolutionary concept in most people's minds, because people think that they naturally need to have other people loving them and caring for them, and because otherwise they'd be alone, and somehow they'd be alone in the world, and they would die somehow. And of course, it's false. You do not need, a normal human being should not and really does not need that. Now, there's a difference. If you have, and this goes back to really the way that a human being relates to the world and relates really to existence, relates to the thing, whatever it is that animates us, whatever it is that makes us conscious, that makes us aware of our own existence, that makes us aware of right and wrong. It's natural for human beings, if you want to talk about what's natural, it's natural for human beings to think about right and wrong. Whereas with a gorilla or a monkey, or you know, you take your rhesus monkey or a dolphin or whatever creature you want to choose, they don't worry about right and wrong. They don't suffer, you know, one gorilla kills the other. I don't know if they kill each other or not, but they don't be fighting over the banana. They don't worry about right and wrong. Doesn't bother them a bit. Yet somehow it's natural for human beings to worry over right and wrong. And then once we worry over right and wrong, then we think, well, we've got to get other people to think the same way we do, and then we won't have to worry about it anymore. Of course, that's a lie. So there's, what is right and wrong? What is natural for a human being is not the same as animals. Animals don't worry about right. That's a fundamental difference. Animals don't worry about right and wrong. They just don't. Show me an animal. Give me an example of any animal or any creature that's not a human being, any creature, non-human creature, whether it's plant or animal, or some kind of weird mixture between the two. Give me an example. Show me an example, any example at all of a non-human creature that has to worry about right and wrong, that in any way whatsoever, there are no examples that you can cite. Only human beings is it natural for us to worry about right and wrong. That's the evidence right there that there's a creator, like it or not. You can try to deny it. Make your group, you know, pass laws that people have to love you, as you know, love you for the rotten self that you've turned into. Love you to try to get you to help force their guilt to go away. And of course it won't work. It's a bottomless pit. And it goes back to, if someone is unhappy with what they are, not even necessarily what they are, or what they've turned into. Go back to me with the example of the tattoos. You know, and I've said over and over again, I've been obsessed with them. I think the obsession hasn't probably completely gone away, but it has really faded off in large part. I'm not compelled anymore, no longer compelled to hang out in tattoo shops, and I haven't gotten any new ones for a few years now. And I don't see that changing. It might. I don't think it will. But being compelled, the idea of getting more has just kind of gone away. It's just sort of faded away. Now, but nonetheless, I'm, you know, pretty well covered with them. So do I feel guilty about them? No, because I realized I was under an obsession to get them. It really, when it came right down to it, that means that it wasn't me. It was something acting through me that caused me to do this. So all I have to do, all I had to do, and this applies to anything that we're wrong about, it applies to everything. All I had to do was allow conscience to catch up. That's it. That's it. That's all you got to do, is allow it. If you can really allow it to catch up, then whatever you've done it can't be undone. Can't go back in time and undo it. And it's a mistake to even want to. Once whatever's done is done, and that's that. And so I have all these tattoos. Well, don't feel guilty about them at all. And I don't need love, honor, and respect from anybody. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a nice thing to have. It's a nice thing to have friends, and it's a nice thing to be able to get along with relatives and all of those things. But that's just icing on the cake. When it comes right down to it, I don't need that in order to somehow not be unhappy. Because I can be perfectly happy by myself, absolutely perfectly happy, and not feel any kind of, anxiety, not feel any kind of the world is out to get me type of feelings. It's very interesting. And it, unless you can actually experience what I'm talking about, it's going to come across as words and just empty words, and he's just, oh, there he goes again. But it really does completely change the way I not only look at the world, but the way I interact with it. Because I literally end up not having to care whether people like me or how they react to me. You know, and I still get people that, you know, some people have positive reactions. Let's just using the tattoos again as an example. Some people have positive reactions. They ask me about them, and sometimes the reactions can be negative, and people scowl at me, and people stare, and once in a while I'll get those kind of reactions. And it doesn't matter. It literally does not matter. So when I have to deal with people in public constantly, I'm dealing with strangers all the time, I don't worry about it one little bit. Whether somebody's going to like me or not, I at this point, I am what I am, and that's that. Doesn't matter whether people accept me or not. Doesn't matter if someone gives me compliments, which that happens all the time. I do the polite thing and I say thank you, but it doesn't, quote unquote, make my day. I get no feeling out of it whatsoever. And conversely, I get no feeling if someone, you know, scowls at me or tells me they look like crap or why would you do that to yourself? Don't get any feeling out of that at all. And so this need for love, honor, and respect is really a dysfunctional need. Now you can say, you can come back and say, well, that's the massive, that's the majority, the mass majority of humanity. They need love, honor, and respect. And they're going to try to force you to give it to them. Why do they need it? And just because it's the majority, does that mean it's right? Not the way I look at it, because I don't need it. I've come to a point where I literally do not need it. So, anyway, I could go on and on. Let's go ahead and finish off Scott's comment. So, once again, here's Scott.
Kings have required that people bow to them and give them love, honor, and respect and say, oh, Almighty King, you are our God, and bow to them and swear their very life and everything else to them. And you know what? They resent it. And as soon as the king turns their back and there's a chance, they'll oftentimes get killed by the very person who, people that swore this stuff, because it doesn't make them like you. In fact, it makes them hate you even more when you try to force them to like you. It's folly to try to do that. There is no way. You have to earn it. You can't force love, honor, and respect of anybody or anything. You know, be it gay, be it blacks, be it women, be it Hispanic, be it, you name the people or the cause, you cannot make anybody give you love, honor, and respect with a law or a gun. You know, it doesn't work and it never will. And that's true folly when you see that happening. And yet, what do we see? We see that happening, you know. Saw another interesting thing, and that was that they, watching the TV while I was working out, I saw this title up on, I guess it was CNN, saying that there are now people that all the frats across the board, period, frats and sororities, all under fire. Should we just get rid of the whole fraternity sorority system? And you probably would agree with me on this, Tom, but I think the answer would be yes. I think that there is no purpose to such a system. The idea that you make people do any kind of stupid thing to show that you got to belong to this tribe or this group, I think, you know, Tom, that's never a good thing. Never a good thing. And they'd be better off without it. And as much as they, you know, often claim in college they're trying to educate you about how things really work, this is really counterproductive. It's like de-evolution. If we're going to rise up, we need to arise above such primal things, and truly that's what that is. If you think about it, it's just giving you the herd mentality. You must do what the herd wants you to do to be a member of the herd or the school. You've talked about this before, Tom, so have I. And so this fraternity sorority system is just this in spades. You know, you've got to be like us and you've got to prove you're like us. Heck, it's a lot like gangs where they have gang initiation. Same thing, just not a very good idea. I think that our colleges will be way better off without those distractions and get to the real stuff that would help people get to a higher order and find their higher self. What do you think? I think you probably agree with that. Maybe Joel, too. We'll get some comments, see what you guys have to say. Catch you later.
Thank you, Scott. Yes, the sorority... Of course, it's kind of dressed up, and it's fraternity and sorority, and you have the sorority sisters and maybe the fraternity brothers. They kind of dress it up, and it's part of the college education system, and they try to make it seem like it's some kind of wonderful thing, but it's really at the root the same thing as a gang initiation. No different. Exactly the same thing. Same forces at work. So they really should just do away with it. And not simply ban the only way you can get rid of it, because they've tried and tried and tried to ban the behavior, ban the initiation, so-called Hell Week, and they've got all these terms for it. They've tried to ban it to no effect. The behavior never really goes away. Comes right back in spades. So ban the groups. No more fraternities, no more sororities. Get rid of them. That's, you get rid of the group. You want to get rid of the initiation, you have to get rid of the group. Now, I don't know, that it's interesting because in the case of colleges, what are those groups? What are the advantages? Those are really like gangs. So what are the advantages of being in the gang, in the fraternity, in the sorority? Well, don't they get kind of special privileges, and maybe they get special job offers, and because they're in the in crowd and they know certain people, and there's an advantage to be in the gang, to being part of that gang. So could they really end up banning it at the school level? The school could do it. You might or might not still end up with the gang behavior, but you ban the gang, you just officially ban the gangs from being part of the school system, the college system. Now, in the case of criminal gangs, or gangs that are kind of illegal or illicit sort of gangs, you can try banning those all you want, and they happen anyway. And I'm thinking of the youth gangs that happen, and those largely happen as a result of breakdown of the family. They really do happen some of them might happen anyway, because you're always going to have some family decay. And so in a large enough city or a large enough area, you're always going to have some gang type of... But it's really sort of a perversion of the family trying to... They're after some sort of a family... I don't know what the proper term would be, but that's... The family is, there's almost like a family yearning. And so you destroy the family. You destroy the traditional mother and father. And you have 50% of the kids being born outside of marriage. Then it stands to reason a lot of them are going to end up in gangs. They're much more vulnerable to ending up in gangs. So, but as far as colleges go, they should be banned. There should be no sororities, no fraternities. They should just go the way of the dodo. Whether they will or not really remains to be seen, but I would just as soon see them be banned. We're banning other things. Let's ban that. Get rid of it. It's useless. It's actually less than useless. It's less than worthless. It's a negative. These things are a negative. They're not a positive. They're a negative. It's ridiculous. Why do we want gangs, official gangs, in as part of higher, so-called higher education? It's absurd. Something's wrong. So, anyway, I could go on and on and on, but really should be bringing this to a close, see if I can get it rendered out and uploaded and published. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.